Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show. Joining us, as always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm at AH Malcolm. You can find him on Twitter at AH Malcolm. But also, you know, he's got actually three things this week. He's got one of his lovely memories series up there. It's a tribute to his father. Be sure to check that out. That's in the clear, by the way. You don't have to be a VIP member. The whole memories thing is a great series over there. And I know that Jen Van Laar really wanted you to be telling some stories, you know?
Well, I told her a couple offline one day and she said, you know, you should write these. And now I think we're up to number 40 or 41. And a bunch of them have to do with my dad. And I got a comment on this week's on my father. I got a comment. The guy said, now I've read every one of them. So that guy deserves a medal.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, happy Father's Day, belatedly.
Sam,
to you.
Thank you very much. Same to everybody here.
Yeah. Happy Father's Day to everybody. This will be going up on Tuesday, but happy Father's Day to y'all. And I hope that you had a good time. I was having a good time right up until my brand new used lens just decided to die on me.
Oh, I saw you commenting on that.
It's unfortunate.
How does a lens stop working? It's just there.
Well, no, because it connects to, you know, your digital single lens reflex cameras, and they talk to each other, right?
Oh.
So when they stop talking to each other, you can't even use this thing as a dumb lens, right? Just something that you have to adjust the focus manually or something. No. It just stops. It just doesn't work.
That's the problem. The problem with tech.
I've never had that happen to me before. I've never seen this error code. I mean, it was kind of funny, right? I'm in the backyard and I'm playing with it because I want to learn a few things about how to use it because I want to use it. I wanted to use it. For a couple different things in the next couple of weeks. And so I'm learning, you know, what's the right mode for it? You know, what's the right, you know, shutter speed for the focal length and all this kind of technical stuff I'm learning. And I went back in and out a couple times to check the pictures that I'd taken and about there. And I, but maybe taking six more pictures on my next turn out there. And all of a sudden it just, can't even see anything, right? You look through the lens finder and it's black because it stopped communicating and it just died. Now,
so
I got this
on.
Just,
it's not just open to what's out there?
No. Just the camera won't work. If it can't talk to the lens, it just simply won't work. If it's a smart lens, I can put dumb lenses on this camera, but if it makes contact with the contacts on the lens, then it assumes it's a smart lens. And if it's not getting an answer back, it just shuts down. And I got this on eBay, and I have to say that the seller was really good about this. He's going to give me my money back because I've only had it for about less than 2 weeks. And it's one of these things that failed that there's absolutely no sign that it's going to do it. It's working great. This particular thing works great until it just suddenly doesn't. And then after that, it's just dead. You can't use it for anything.
You can't repair it?
No, and this lens is obsolete, has been obsoleted by Canon. It's a great lens. It was a great lens. In fact, it was a real favorite for journalists and photojournalists because it's very versatile and it was rugged. But at this point in time, it would cost me more to get the lens fixed than it was probably worth in the first place. It was a really nice lens. It's a real shame.
You must have a terrible backyard for it to short out.
Well, you know what? The problem was I turned it around to take a picture of my face and suddenly it just died. I don't know, Andrew.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was what I was doing on Father's Day.
Moving on to less important things.
Moving on to less important things. Go check out Andrew's Father's Day post, definitely. I want to talk about some of the other stuff that you've done, though. We got to talk about this Obama Presidential Center, don't we?
Have you ever
seen anything as ugly?
No.
I mean, I'm not a fan of brutalist architecture. Brutalist looks positively Baroque next to this thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I know. I know.
What is that? It's like the Death Star.
Well, you know, I said it was, it, to my eyes, it was a Klingon penitentiary, but you can't explain what it is. I see one guy on Twitter put it up next to a picture of one of those from Star Wars, that big machine that moved through recycling with all the little critters.
Yeah, with the little feet on it. That's what it looks like. On Tatooine, right? I mean, that's kind of what it looks like.
You know, I don't know what went through his mind when he approved it. There must be a shrink could come up with a really good reason. It's connected to him and his, what's the word? His insecurities in some way. But boy, it's virtually window free, $30. You need an ID. And you know, it's not really interactive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know. Did you see the picture of the ceiling, by the way?
No.
So inside, this is inside. It's just as ugly inside, I guess. There's the ceiling, and it's an odd shaped ceiling. It's got a peak in it. And at the peak is this golden square. I don't know what I don't even know what that is supposed to be, but there's this like gold square at the very peak. But around it, it looks like this sort of black or grayish cloud, right? And it turns out that these are all the words that were ever used in an Obama speech. I am not kidding. I'm not joking about this. Remarked on, it's the picture of this is going around on Twitter. It looks like mold. It looks like mold got into there. I don't know whose idea this was. I'm sure that conceptually people are going, oh yeah, this is a word cloud. We'll put a word cloud on the ceiling. And word clouds are things. I mean, you know, they're analytical devices and stuff like that. And they said, well, we'll do a word cloud and it will be, you know, very, you know, edgy, I guess, or very hip. I don't know. It looks like mold is growing on the ceiling. It looks like they need to bring in a specialist to clean this thing up. I'm sure that, and of course, you know, I'm looking at this based on the picture. I'm sure if you're in there, you can look up and understand that this is words, but this looks ugly.
So what you're saying is ugly. You're saying this really isn't the Sistine Chapel.
No, this is not the Sistine Chapel. Although if it was the Sistine Chapel, if Barack Obama, I mean, based on what this has all been about, and to a certain extent, all presidential libraries are about narcissism, right? But this is, I think, especially so. If there was a Sistine Chapel, you know, ceiling paint thing, you'd have Obama's finger on both sides.
Going down. Oh boy.
But yeah. You know,
well, you know, he's much taken with his words. My favorite Obama speech was in the 08 campaign when he announced that he'd been to 57 of the 58 states. And yeah. That's what happens when you're raised in a Muslim household in Jakarta, I guess. But he's so taken with this. My favorite campaign thing, and I think this was 2012, he was speaking at an open-air place in Roanoke, Virginia, and it was a brutally hot day. He was up like on the parapet of a city hall, and the crowd was thousands of people all over the square. And as he's droning on, he realized that people were fainting in the heat. So, of course, being as thoughtful as Obama was about other people, he pointed out that there were medics in the crowd. And he started to tell people how to stand in the heat without fainting. Don't lock your knees and so forth. Instead of saying, okay, folks, look, I'll put this on YouTube. You guys go get some air conditioning. No, he pointed out and he started pointing out to the medics where people were fainting. And then he went on for the second half of his speech to give it. And that's how full of himself he is. I was going to say was, but no. So I could understand a word cloud that nobody else could understand.
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, it's not even that nobody can understand it. It's just that it's ugly. I mean, there's... It just... It's just... I don't know. It's like, didn't anybody take a look at this? Did no one step back and say, you know, this may not look good. This may not work.
And especially in a city that invented the skyscraper and the elevator, with a skyline, a lakefront skyline that is as beautiful and dramatic as Chicago's. And there is this thing plopped down on the south side. But the good news, Ed, is that it's not far from the historical marker, marking for all time and eternity. It's a 3,000-pound boulder with a plaque on it, marking for all time the place where Obama first kissed Michelle.
Yeah.
And he said she tasted like chocolate.
Because did he really say that?
Yeah, because they were outside of Baskin Robbins. That was their first date. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. I guess I don't.
And the ugly thing now costs what, $837 million instead of the original 300, and they still haven't put the money in place, back up for when it goes bankrupt, so the city doesn't have to pay bailout money.
You know, I mean, that's astounding to me. You know, you know how much Valerie Jarrett gets paid?
Yes, $750,000 a year.
A year to run the foundation.
And there's something going on there. She's the one, as soon as she was working in, I think it was City Hall, she sort of adopted Obama and shepherded him around when he came to Chicago, introduced him to all the blacks, key elite people in the city and so on. And he's glommed onto her. When he left the White House, he bought the mansion that the spokesman for the NFL sold. Anyway, Valerie moved in with him for years. So, you know, she was born in Iran, so she may have had a tough childhood.
Well, I'm sure she probably did. But, I mean, that doesn't mean she should get $750,000 running an outfit that can't even fulfill its funding. And they're stiffing contractors left and right. I mean, there was contractors have been on the television saying, I haven't been paid. They're doing this big opening ceremony and I haven't even been paid yet. And and the work's been finished for months. These people are going to go out of business. They're going to lose their businesses because they can't get the money out. And you know, what's going to wind up happening is the state of Illinois is going to end up having to bail it out, which is what the fund was supposed to be created.
Yeah, but they haven't put the 400 million or the, was it 470s, and they've only put $1 million in, so they're $469 million in the hole there. But it's like Obamacare. You can keep your doctor and health plan if you want it. It's Obama. You know, he says he had never had any scandal. Well, let's start with Benghazi, and then there's Solyndra. It's just the guy is a piece of work. He was elected. Remember the poster in 2008, the Hope poster?
Yep.
It was actually the artist got taken to court because it was copying an AP photo of Obama sort of staring at the skies. He was actually at a George Clooney speech about Sudan. And an AP photographer took a picture of him. So that became the Hope poster. And it was all about hope, right? Si se puede. And hope. Yeah. Well, he wrote that. And a lot of people, a lot of Americans, elected their first Black president with hope, right? And within a few months, the guy went on a global apology tour, apologizing for the country that just placed their hopes and trust in him as the first Black president. The stuff he did, besides going AWOL during Benghazi, that stuff is just unforgivable in my mind. So I'm not surprised he has an ugly building. I think there's a subconscious thing going on there, because he was sometimes described himself, I've forgotten the word, he was a mutt, because he was biracial. He described himself in some speeches as a mutt. Anyway, it was a mixture of races, as if that wasn't good. Sort of self, trying to be self-deprecating. Anyway, boy.
Yep.
Yeah. I do not miss that crowd.
Well, I don't miss that crowd either. And I think the worst part of that crowd was what happened with Joe Biden at the end of that event thing, where they left him on stage. Jill Biden left him on stage so she could walk off with Barack Obama and waving her hands as if she is, you know, the main supporting character in that thing. Left Joe on stage to wander around, go up to the microphone, go, "Where's my granddaughter? Where's my granddaughter?" And nobody's there. And finally, he starts wandering off to the other side. And that's when I think Jill Biden came out and got him. But, you know, this is all captured on TV. And whoever was operating the camera knew that this was not a good scene, because as soon as he got to the podium and said, "Where's my granddaughter?" and started wandering off to the other side, they moved the shot up to the to the banner above it and made sure that that was the end of that. But
yeah, he did a lot of wandering, and Obama's the one who stuck us with him, even though in 2016 he wanted to pay back Hillary, so he told Joe it wasn't necessary to run.
And then they were all behind him in 2020 and 2024 until that debate. And I mean,
because they knew they could manipulate him. Yeah,
they were running him. That was Obama's third term. Yeah, he had his team in there. It was Obama's third term. He was just the patsy, the I guess. Who was but I don't care. I mean, I care about that stuff, and there should be accountability for that. Everybody who was involved in that should be in prison, as far as I'm concerned. But what was really, I think, just really disgusting about what happened there was the fact that they left a senile old man to wander around on stage, and even his wife didn't give enough of a damn to make sure that, to make him look, to maintain his dignity until he got off the stage.
I wrote that column a couple of weeks ago. It's elder abuse, and there's no consequences for that either.
Nope, there hasn't been. All right, I'm going to move on to your other column, the topic of your other column, the Iran war was right, the end deal not so much. You know, I've kind of gone through the Kubler-Ross five stages of, I don't know what you'd call it, with this MOU. Anger, denial, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. I may be somewhere around acceptance at this point in time, or maybe not. I might still be in bargaining. Yeah. You know what that is, right? The Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Of... That's why I was laughing. It's so apt. Five stages of grieving.
The five stages of grief. And you know how I learned about that? Oh. Hand to God, I learned about that from the movie All That Jazz. Because they keep referring to it through All That Jazz. Cliff Gorman plays a guy who's a stand-up comic who keeps making reference to it. Because All That Jazz is about death. This was Bob Fosse's, concept of his own death eventually. Oh. And it's a great movie. I love All That Jazz. But it's not a cheerful movie. It just isn't. Yeah. And but that's how I learned about the Kubler-Ross thing. And I went and looked it up later on in life, and I was like, oh, this is real. So the MOU. I'm absolutely stunned that we're back down to what looks to be a JCPOA-ish sort of framework to negotiate an eventual end to hostilities. I will say this, though, and I think that in my initial depression, I guess, I'm not sure, or anger and denial or whatever it was, whatever stage I happen to be in, the situation is different. We've sunk their entire navy. We have destroyed most of their air force. They just simply started burying the planes at some point, because they have a very old air force, and there's no way it was going to stand up either against us or the Israelis. Their army's intact because their army wasn't really involved in this, but we've destroyed all that. We've destroyed a substantial amount of their infrastructure, and it was targeted. It was strategic. We not only killed their military infrastructure, we killed the infrastructure that supported the military infrastructure, and to a certain level got down to a third level on that. It's going to take them years just to build up the infrastructure so they can rebuild the main military infrastructure. So there's wins that have come out of this. And I am not necessarily convinced that anybody at the White House actually expects this to succeed, because I'm not sure how you can expect it to
No,
succeed.
you can't. No. No.
I'm
These
wondering if
guys
this
are.
is just a play out the string and get back to doing what we were doing before, or if they're just simply looking to say, well, we gave it a good college try. We're just going to keep the Strait of Hormuz open and let the region take care of itself.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a mess. I don't think. Yes, you're right about destroying that the equipment, but they refuse to accept it, and they're just stalling. The only thing they have left is the straits, and string this out so it hurts Trump in the midterms. That's all it is. And I'm surprised. I was surprised when Putin played Trump out in Ukraine. He still is. And I'm surprised that Trump let this go this far. He's always said in his book and in life, the most important thing in making a deal is the willingness to walk away. And he's not been willing to walk away. And that tells me that he wants it more than, and they know it. He wants it more than they care about, so they can play it. I don't. It pretty much. Well, first of all, the war is unpopular. It never was popular because it went on too long. Grenada, you can get away with. Panama, you can get away with, but not one that goes on a long time with anyone who was alive during Vietnam and Afghanistan. And so I'm surprised he didn't just cut it and get it over with, either bomb some more. I guess that's the only alternative, but he's not. He's stretching it out. He's agreeing to them stretching it out in effect, de facto. And I think a lot of people who are his supporters think, wait a minute, they look back, and this is what I did in the column on Sunday. They look back at what he said at the beginning, regime change, no control of the Straits of Hormuz, never get a nuclear weapons. Well, never, that's going too far. But set them back a couple decades, yeah, okay, you can do that. And he did that. So I don't know why we're so hung up on getting them to agree to something. They never will. They're stretched it out. It was less than 24 hours before after signing the paper that they announced that the straits were closed again. And that was a key part of the agreement. Now, they aren't closed. They're just trying to play the insurance companies, I guess. But you can't make a deal with these guys. You just can't. They don't want a deal. That's the way they win.
Yeah, no, I mean, and they'll stall it out. They'll do what they're doing right now, which is what I call the Tehran two-step, which is to have to talk peace while they're having their proxies start, you know, try to provoke Israel into firing at them, so they have an excuse to bail out of the talks. That's the Tehran two-step. This is what I used to call it, the Hamas hokey pokey, right? Which was that you get to you go into talks, and this is the pattern, the modus operandi. You go into talks, you get the Western countries to agree to a certain set of concessions, and then you do something and change the terms.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you keep doing this and so that you can work out more concessions, because you're always, well, we're almost there, but now we need something more. And then there's a lot of pressure on Israel or the US or whoever is on the other side of the table to just offer them a few more concessions and we'll get there. Yeah.
That's remember how long it took to get the original Obama thing. They kept getting more and more, and they ended up getting a whole bunch of money. You're absolutely right. A two-step. That's maybe a three or four-step. Another one of the Ed-isms.
Well, you know, I chose two-step just because it's a dance, right? I mean, you can just call it the three-step, the 10-step, the Tehran 10-step, if you want to call it that too. But basically, it's theater is what it is. They're not interested in actually doing peace.
In any kind of agreement. Yeah, right.
Right.
So why play? Why agree to it? Why play along? And this is what, you know, Trump has always said. Walk away. Well, walk away and then wait for them to do something bad and then just annihilate them. He said we were going to put them, remember in his Oval Office speech, he said in the next 2 weeks, we're going to put them back. What was it? To the Stone Age. We're going to put them back to the Stone Age where they belong. Okay. Well.
Yep. Yep. So, yeah. You know, the Iranians are still saying today that the Strait of Hormuz will be open only under Iranian terms and under Iranian management. And Trump has said absolutely not. This, to me, it looks like a framework for failure. Yeah. Mostly because Iran is never going to stop. They're never going to stop.
Never.
These are terrorists.
Never.
They're not. Yeah, this is not a situation where you've got, you know, Pakistan and India. There's a lot of grudge holding between Pakistan and India, but they're both rational governments that are mainly interested in maintaining their own sovereignty and maintaining, you know, their
right
commercial and diplomatic things. The Iranian regime is something else. It's a different sort of thing. They're interested in creating an apocalypse so that their 12th imam will come out of the mountain. And that's what they're aiming at. That's everything they do is aiming at that.
Well, one of the things I mentioned in the column, which I hope people will check out, is we got through the Cold War with MAD, mutually assured destruction. That is, if Russia or us, if the Soviet Union or us started a war, everybody would die, not just the enemy. And so everybody held off because they knew the end was nigh. These guys, they don't mind the end. I guess they get 72 virgins, but they get to go to the good place if they die. And so if you're negotiating with martyrs, that kind of takes away your leverage, I think.
Just a little bit. Just a little bit. By the way, I just have to work in this thing. One last thing about the Obama Presidential Center. Kurt Schlichter said it looked like a monument to Peyronie's disease. It's a great line. Just really quickly, though, before we get to the jokes of the week, the thing about presidential libraries is they're all narcissistic, and it's a fairly recent phenomenon, and relatively recent in the American experience. I think FDR was maybe the first president that had his own presidential library, and then every other president after that has kind of followed suit. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Welcome to Mooseport.
No,
but
oh, is that with
Gene Hackman? Hackman and yeah. The guy Romano. From Everybody Loves Raymond, Ray Romano, right? And there's this little subplot through there that Gene Hackman is like the most popular president ever to exit the White House. Everybody loves him. He's getting tons of money for his presidential library. Then gets caught up in this stupid political thing in this town while he's divorcing his wife. And it's really a funny movie. People, I think it was Gene Hackman's last movie. It's really kind of cute and it's funny. Didn't get good reviews, but I actually enjoyed it. And the whole thing is, as the movie is going along, they keep having to take the little buildings out of the model because he doesn't have the money to. It ends up being one building.
Oh, I forgot about that.
It's like nine buildings and it's beautiful. It's gorgeous. They keep having to tell the architect, well, we need to take a couple more out. And the architect is like in tears over this.
The thing about presidential libraries that I haven't minded them until now, because there was a point to them, right? A research point. If you go to the Reagan one, you can see actually videos and you can read further into documents about what actually happened. They had Air Force One there. There's a reason for it that has to do with history, which I think is important. Obama's is kind of an ugly salute to himself. It's like, this is the ugly thing I left behind.
I mean, it's the ugliness, I think, that is the most notable thing about this. I mean, there are apparently plans for Trump's presidential library, which is going to be a skyscraper.
Yeah,
it's going to be very Trumpian. So I don't want to necessarily just lay this off on Barack Obama. I think that they all tend to be this. And the National Archives was what was supposed to serve in that role, right? Was that President?
That's not enough. We have to have an architectural salute to elegance and grace and grandeur.
I guess.
National Archives, that's not grand. Come on.
You know, I'm gonna create my own presidential archives. And you know what it's going to be? It's going to be a Five Guys. Or an In-N-Out. It'll be an In-N-Out. You want a double-double? You want a 4x4? That's what it's going to be like. I think that if I had a presidential library, it'd look like an In-N-Out.
That's a great idea. A Buc-ee's. Just all it is.
A Buc-ee's. Making a Buc-ee's.
Ed's presidential library. Ed's presidential library is just a place where he can sell his merch.
There's another movie reference I'll make to that. My Fellow Americans with Jack Lemmon and James Garner, which was actually also pretty funny. It's about two presidents that have to hate each other, that have to team up to overcome a government conspiracy. And it's absolutely hilarious. The politics aren't too bad. There is some, there's a little of it, but not too bad. And James Garner and Jack Lemmon are hilarious in this thing. But Jack Lemmon plays this guy who's selling merchandise all the time. And he's a former president who's got like, speaking dolls of him. You know, our dreams are like our children.
What's that called?
My Fellow Americans. It's pretty cute. Dan Aykroyd's in it. John Hurd. I don't want to give away too much. John Hurd has an absolutely hilarious role as the vice president. And there's a line near the end of the movie that is, I swear to you, is Kamala Harris. It was obviously meant to tweak Dan Quayle, but this guy is actually pure Kamala Harris. Or Joe Biden. You could say either one. And you'd be close to the mark. My Fellow Americans, it's actually a funny movie. If you haven't seen it, you should definitely check that out. Lots of jokes in it. And that brings us to the jokes of the week. Andrew, I know that you've got at least one. I've got one for you.
I do too. Just a minute. I have to remember my password. Okay, so this is an old Conan O'Brien joke. He said, "Today, the Supreme Court ruled that television networks can show momentary nudity. So by popular demand, The View is now a radio show."
That still works to this day. That still works. There you go.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Rosie O'Donnell's going to be filling in for Jimmy Kimmel, I guess, next week. She's coming back from Ireland. You got to give Rosie O'Donnell credit. She's the only person, I think Ellen DeGeneres may have been the other one, who said that she would move out of... I don't even think Ellen DeGeneres was related to the election. Rosie O'Donnell said she'd move out of the United States if Trump got reelected, and she actually did. You got to give her credit for committing to the bit, but she's coming back for a couple of weeks while Kimmel's on vacation. That's lovely. That's not my joke of the week, though, because that's not funny. Oh. And I'm almost guaranteeing you that show is not going to be funny. But all right, here's the joke. Farmer walks into a bar. And he sees his friend, who's a local tractor salesman, right, sitting at the bar, and he's looking really down. He's got his face almost in the beer at the bar, right? So he sits down next to him. Farmer says, "What's up, John?" And John says, "Look, Bob, I'll tell you what. If I don't sell a tractor soon, I'm going to have to close my shop." And Bob says, "Well, now, John, things could be worse." John says, "How do you figure?" And the farmer goes, "Well, look, you know my cow Bessie, the one that's really difficult to deal with. I went to milk her this morning. She kept flicking her tail in my face. So I grabbed a piece of rope and I tied it to the rafter. And then the cow got upset. And every time I put the bucket down and kicked the bucket. So I took another piece of rope and I tied it to the leg. Well, she used the other leg to keep kicking the bucket. And I was out of rope. So I took off my belt and I tied that leg down with the belt." He says, "And then my pants fell down." And Bob says, "So?" And John says, "So?" And Bob says, "Look, I'm telling you that if you can convince my wife that I was just there to milk the cow, I will buy a tractor from you."
"I will buy a tractor."
Yeah. "I will buy a tractor from you." All right. Well, that was jokesoftheday.net. There was another one I had in here, but I think I scrolled past it, which is unfortunate because I think that one was pretty good too. That's a long one. That's a Shaggy Dog one.
We got next week.
We got next week. We always have next week. It's sort of like we'll always have Paris.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know. We'll always have next week. Well, and you've got some great content from Andrew Malcolm over at redstate.com. Go check out his column, the free column, Malcolm's Memories, The Joy of My Father's Joy. Go check that out. It's a lovely essay. Go read that. And his other two VIP columns as well. But Malcolm's Memories is not paywalled. So everybody can go over there and take a look at that. And we never paywall this podcast either. This is open to everybody because we just enjoy doing it so much. Malcolm, though, is the prince of Twitter, as well as the regent of redstate.com, at @ahmalcolm on X/Twitter. And we're here every Monday, except for those Mondays when we're not. Tuesday.
We should begin selling merch at Get Some.
Yeah, we should.
Our dreams are like our children. Why are we always selling merchandise?
Well, you know, you're not Andy Rooney this week. You're Charles Kuralt.
That's true.
There you go. So I have to be the... What is up with selling merchandise on news shows? Why did we start doing that? Okay, so there you go. My Andy Rooney.
I love that.
Okay. All right, Andrew Malcolm, until next week, have yourself a lovely week, sir.
You too, and thank you, everybody. See you then.